sometimes, rather than trying to like avoid making the wrong decision, which is what creates a lot of indecisiveness, is just make decisions. And the faster you can make decisions, the faster you can get data back and you can pivot and make new decisions, and the faster you can get to whatever your goal is. I'm Michael Mogul, founder and CEO of Crisp, the nation's number one law firm growth company. I've built my business through practice, not theory. Crisp started with just $500 to my name and has grown to over eight figures in revenue over the last few years, earning a spot on the Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing private companies in America. Our approach has been to take everything we've learned about generating massive growth within our own organization and help the country's most ambitious and committed law firm owners do the same for theirs. In each episode of this podcast, I sit down with innovative market leaders from the legal industry and beyond to learn from those who thrive in the face of adversity, challenge the status quo, and define what it means to be a true game changer.
This is Jessica, Head of Coaching Strategy at Crisp, and today we're flipping the script for another special edition episode to get Michael's take on how to maintain a sense of clarity and purpose in the face of constant change, how to overcome analysis paralysis and trust your instincts, and how to build resilience and stay committed to seeing things through.
When things get tough, you're tempted to quit. How do you build up resilience? Well, you have to strengthen that resilience muscle. It's not like somebody comes out of the womb and they're immediately resilient and they just can stick with hard things. It's that they develop that muscle over time by sticking with things that were difficult and challenging and not giving up when they got bored, when they got frustrated. It's being able to lead themselves in a way where they were able to develop a level of discipline to see things through to completion.
That's coming up on the Game Changing Attorney Podcast. Welcome back.
Here we are.
Yet again.
Another AMMA. You guys submit the questions. We answer the questions. Jessica, how do they submit the questions?
They text you.
Yep. You text us. It's a 404-531-7691. Yes. Text your questions. If it's a good enough or bad enough question, we'll answer it right here on podcast, on the AMMA. And if you're joining us for the first time, we do a couple different types of episodes. So we've got our traditional interview format episodes where we're bringing in an expert from the legal industry or beyond who thrives in the face of danger, right? They heard
adversity.
The intro. Oh, yeah. And thrives in the face of adversity. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So you hear that in our intros, but we bring in people from all sorts of different industries, best-selling authors, elite athletes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I interviewed them and we present their insights on the podcast. Then we've got our encore editions where we bring back some of our most popular episodes from the podcast. And now you're listening to it. Third type of episode is the AMMA. There is kind of a fourth type, a bonus edition. Sometimes just we ask you the questions, the AJMA. You know, you got to be a very special kind of, that's right. It's exclusive. I'm excited to almost get into it. But before we do, two things. Number one, if you enjoy the show, if you get any sort of value whatsoever, we do not run any ads on the show. So we ask that you please share the show. Leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. This helps us reach not only new guests, it helps us reach new audiences. So if you find this episode or another episode helpful, we encourage you to share it. And you can actually go ahead and leave a five-star review right now. And if you don't like this episode, you can go take it back and say, ooh, not what I was expecting, right? So hopefully we'll deliver for you. Number two, for those of you who listened to, I think, a previous AMMA, I was right about to go into LASIK surgery, LASIK eye surgery, and I was absolutely terrified because that surgery now was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago. And I remember going in, we were talking about it right here on the podcast, that you'd never want to go online and look up what could go wrong, okay? Because
everything could
go. Everything can go wrong, nothing good. So I had people telling me this was the best thing they ever done in their life. These are people that are married with children, and they said LASIK was the best thing they ever did in their life, not marrying their spouse or having kids. So, you know, I think this is pretty good. Yeah, it's a pretty high accolade. So I'm going for the surgery, and I'll briefly share this story. Right, because you never know what to expect. They asked me, hey, Michael, do you want to take the sedative? And I said, no, I'm good. You walk in, I think there were six other people there that were also getting their surgery. They're like, look, each person's going to be in and out in 15 minutes. First lady goes, they take her back in the room. They're like, by the way, if you smell anything burning, don't worry. If that's not your cornea, that's the gases from the machine. And I said, oh, okay, good. Good to know. That's the smell I'd be smelling. And then the whole time they're just telling you about what to expect, kind of like how to take care of yourself afterwards, right? They don't look at any screens, wear the glasses, like don't bump into anything, like put the drops in your eyes. The first lady comes back out, you know, she's wearing the glasses over her head, and they ask her, you know, so how was it? And you're expecting everyone to say it was amazing, right? Because it was quick and it was easy and it was painless. And she says, it was worse than I thought it would be. And I'm like, oh, okay.
So five more people ahead of you.
So yeah, I still had another five ahead of me. The next one was like, oh, it was easy. It was painless. And, you know, and that was the case for everybody else. But this is the problem with live testimonials. You got to be careful, right? You're going to ask somebody for the first time. You got to make sure they had a phenomenal time. Either, if not, take them out the back room, right? Just whatever. So then I finally go in and, you know, they let you come in as well. They let you bring somebody for emotional support. They can hold your hand. I go in, they put the drops in my eyes. The whole thing is painless. It was actually, no matter what anyone was telling me, it was nowhere near as bad. Not that anyone told me it was going to be bad, but they're like, oh, you're going to feel a little pressure. What pressure, right? It was all good. The only uncomfortable part is the thing they use to keep your eyelids open, but that's all good. In and out. I think my whole surgery took 8 minutes or less.
Yeah.
But they let you sit there and they let you watch the whole thing. So that's I get up.
Mistake.
Yeah, that was a huge mistake. So I get up and I'm like, bam, I can see. It's like, wow, this is crazy, right? And then I look over at you. And at this point, Jessica has gone completely white. Looks like she's about to pass out. And they're like, oh, I think we got to bring her a Coke. And we got to bring her something to raise her blood
ice
sugar.
Pack.
Ice pack or something. And I'm like, what? What happened, right? And apparently, I guess you got a little, you know, kind of
wheezy
watching the eye surgery, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I couldn't see it because I was being operated on. I'm just seeing like a little LED light in front of me, and that's it. My whole like LASIK experience, it's supposed to be about me, Jessica, but it wasn't about me. It was about you and making sure everything was okay. And I'm glad that everything was okay with you. And I get to experience this in a few weeks when you go and get to get your LASIK surgery done. So.
And they've already put a note in my chart.
About the sedative?
Yeah.
Yeah, making sure that you get one?
Yeah.
Anyway, the takeaway is, don't do a live testimonial if you're not 100% sure that someone's going to give a positive testimonial. Although I had a great experience. I highly recommend it. If anyone needs a referral, reach out to me. Great. I'm more than happy to share it. Also, it's been amazing. A week later, you just wake up every day and you can just see. I mean, I wouldn't say this is like the best thing I've ever done in my life, because I'd say maybe I'm like marrying you and then our two girls. That's good probably answer. Go up there. But this will probably be the top 10 for sure. To be able to just wake up and see. You don't have to fumble around with glasses or contacts or anything like that anymore. It's awesome. So highly recommend. But with that, you know, people are probably like fast forwarding through this part. Let's get to the AMMA, Jessica. What kind of questions we got?
Well, now that you have those amazing eyes that can see everything, we're going to talk about shiny object syndrome today.
Uh-oh.
See what
I'll
see. All right. So first question up. As a law firm owner, I'm constantly bombarded with new challenges and uncertainties that threaten to derail my focus and productivity. How can I maintain a sense of clarity and purpose in the face of constant change and avoid succumbing to distractions or shiny object syndrome?
Yeah, well, you know what the definition is of shiny object syndrome? It is, as soon as something gets hard, something new looks easy. You know, it's kind of like squirrel, right? Things get difficult. Rather than sticking with the thing that you should be doing, you abandon ship and go do something else. Is this a question more around like, how do I stick to things and avoid being distracted? Well, think about why you were distracted in the first place. And typically this comes down to a reason of like, you're not really clear on what your focus should be. You're not very clear on what your priorities should be. Because if you were clear on those things, it's much easier to make decisions through the lens of being clear on what your focus is. But if you have no idea exactly what you're trying to do or where you're going, there's no GPS in mind, like there's no destination, then you know, how do you even like make a decision? How do you know if that decision's moving you closer to where you want to go or further away from where you want to go? You don't, because you don't have any sort of North Star. So it starts with being very clear and getting clear, if you're not, around what your focus is. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you're trying to grow the law firm. You're digging into like, what are the areas where we have for improvement? And you find out that your intake team is doing a very poor and inconsistent job of signing cases. And it turns out that's the number one thing that you want to improve. You want to improve the conversion. You want to improve the effectiveness of your intake team. And you decide, this is where our priority is going to be. This is what's going to help us grow our firm, because we see this is the area that has the greatest opportunity for improvement and has the greatest payoff should we, you know, ultimately solve this challenge. You're clear on this thing. But then somebody hits you up and says, hey, I think you should run some Google pay-per-click ads. Well, if you're clear on the fact that you're trying to solve your intake conversion issue and you're trying to improve your intake team, well, then you would know that running additional pay-per-click ads has absolutely nothing to do with that. So you would hit no. Then let's say somebody reached out to you and says, hey, I think you should do some radio, or I think you should do some billboards, or I think you should do some TV. And you're like, Well, and through the lens of me wanting to improve my intake conversion, this has absolutely nothing to do with that. So the answer is no. And then maybe somebody says, hey, you know what? I think you should start leveraging AI, like artificial intelligence. And you might look at it and say, well, it depends, right? Maybe this will help us develop better scripts and AI can make things a little more efficient, you know, maybe in some case, but it's not the main thing. So maybe you put it off for now, right? Because your focus is improving your intake and conversion. What does that take? Well, it's ensuring that you've got the right people, you know, in place, that they're doing the right things, the right activities. Maybe, you know, they're not following scripts. Maybe they don't have scripts. So you need to develop scripts. Maybe they are, you know, they don't know what they should be saying on the phones. Maybe it's a training issue. Maybe it's a development issue. Maybe you have to solve for all of those things. So let's say somebody comes along and says, hey, you know what? Maybe we should hire an intake expert. Well, that could actually improve our intake and conversion challenges, right? So maybe the focus then becomes on hiring. And maybe the focus becomes on training. And maybe the focus becomes on development. That's just, and again, that's just one isolated challenge. But it's like, by being clear on those things, it's much easier to say no to everything else. Because, you know, as an entrepreneur or any business owner for that matter, any opportunity for growth seems like a good one, right? It's like, of course, there's all sorts of things you could do and maybe things you should do, but is that going to solve the biggest challenge? And the thing that I've seen with many, many entrepreneurs is that by trying not to miss out on any opportunity, you fail to solve the root issues within a law firm or within your business, because you're never giving them the time that they need to truly solve them and make them sustainable. You're just kind of jumping from one thing to the next, and then nothing gets fully baked. Nothing really gets seen through to completion. And then you have a bunch of open loops of projects or ideas that you started that, you know, seemed exciting at the time, but never came to fruition. So let's say you take advantage of one of these opportunities. You start running pay-per-click ads, you start running radio, you start running TV, you know, billboards, whatever. You start taking advantage of artificial intelligence, but your intake conversion issue still looms. So now not only do you need to solve these new things that you brought on and implement them, but you're trying to do that concurrently with, you know, with the root issues that you have as well. So, and then as you continue to say yes and yes and yes to more things, then that's, you know, that could potentially deviate your focus off of what the main thing is. So you got to make the main thing the main thing. You got to be like a horse with blinders, okay? Like, you have to be able to be so isolated and dig in and say, okay, I'm going to focus all my time and energy and resources on solving what you believe is the number one challenge, right? Or the number one problem. And again, if you do enough discovery on the front end, and if you actually really set the time to like set aside to like figure out what are the single biggest challenges in our firm that are standing in the way of our growth, and then prioritizing those things and saying, here's what we're going to tackle in the first quarter, here's what we're going to tackle in the second quarter, here's what we're going to tackle in the third quarter. Now you have a plan. And if you're going to do something different, well, then you have a very good reason for that, and saying, well, you know, maybe something great comes along, right? Maybe you have an opportunity to acquire another law firm. Maybe you have an opportunity to hire an amazing trial attorney. You have to look at that through the lens of saying, is the upside here greater than the downside of neglecting the area that we were focusing on? Sometimes rarely it is, but you know, there's times where it is. But then you can say, okay, we're going to shift this quarter two initiative to quarter three so I can focus on, you know, what this opportunity that happened in quarter two. But then that also means that everything else has to shift too, because what was in Q3 now shifts to Q4, and what was in Q4 shifts to Q1 of the following year.
Yep.
So just, you have to make sure that the trade-off is worth it.
Yes. Just anytime you add something, know that something's got to come off as well.
That's right.
All right. Next up. So I tend to overanalyze every decision I make for my firm, which often leads to indecision and missed opportunities. How can I overcome analysis paralysis when it comes to choosing the most effective strategies for growth?
It's interesting, because some people are going to be more fact finder in nature, right? They're going to try to analyze every single decision. It's like, you tell me how long it takes you to buy a product on Amazon, right? How many reviews do you look at, right? This one's got 5,000 reviews. This one's got 6,000 five-star reviews, maybe 4.5 stars. And it's like, what is the best coffee mug, right? Like, let me figure this out. And you spend 2 hours trying to figure out what the best coffee mug is.
Never enough for me.
So there's never enough information. You're going to continue to analyze and analyze and analyze. You have to look at this from the standpoint of like, how do you avoid this? What is this that you're doing really? Right? Because I look at it through the lens of, let me take it back. Somebody who's doing this analysis paralysis looks at it from the standpoint, if I can get more information, if I can get more facts, this allows me to make a better decision. That could be true. And I think for some situations, the more information that you receive, the more that empowers you to make a better decision. But there is some sort of criteria once you've got about 80% of the information, or even 90% of the information, the time it takes you to get the additional 10 or 20%, there is an opportunity cost to that. And I look at things through the lens of, well, the speed at which you're able to make decisions, like, what is the opportunity cost of taking a really long time? So sometimes, you know, opportunities come and go. Sometimes the time, if you're going to, you know, deliberate over something or some new initiative for multiple months, by the time you decide to actually move forward on it, you still have to, like, you know, execute on it. And the time that, you know, from the time that you decide to the time that you execute to the time you realize results, everything is delayed, right? So let's say you're deliberating, like, whether you should hire an additional attorney. And you're thinking about it, you're thinking about it, you're thinking about it, you're thinking about it. You know, 3 months go by, you know, you're all stressed out. You finally decide to do it. Okay, you decide to hire. Great. Now it's going to probably take you, let's say, 60 to 90 days to find this person. Then that person is probably going to want to put in a 2 to 4 week notice, which is another 30 days. Then by the time you actually, you know, let's say they join your law firm, there's like training and onboarding, which is going to take another 30 to 60 days. So how long does it take until you actually can start to see the value from this person and from this decision? And if you spent 3 or 4 months deliberating, Well, that's going to significantly delay the time, you know, until you get the actual payoff or receive any sort of upside. So it's realizing that, you know, you have to be able to be decisive and you have to know the cutoff of when you've received enough information. And you're not, and if you're going to operate off of like, I can only make decisions with absolute certainty, well, then you're going to take a really long time to make a lot of decisions. And then what is certainty anyway, right? And then like, how do you even know if you're going to be right or wrong? Because you're probably going to play, you know, very small, and you're only going to do things that have extremely low risk or sure things. They carry very little upside. They may have a little downside, but they have very little growth potential. So it's trying to be perfect, I think, is in a form, you know, it's a form of procrastination, really. And instead, maybe looking at it from the standpoint of, if I can make decisions faster, I can be wrong faster, and then I can get data and feedback faster, and then I can make another decision and I can be right. So, you know, you see this in a lot of very large organizations. They operate almost like, you know, trying to pivot is like trying to move a cruise ship, to where like the, you know, they are set in their ways on like, you know, this whole like RFP deliberation process of trying to make a certain decision. Whereas, you know, smaller and nimble organizations can be wrong, let's say 8, 9, 10 times, and then right on the 11th, and they can get there faster than a large organization that, you know, how long it takes to procure, you know, one decision. Okay. And then again, the other aspect of it, I'm going to get dark for a moment. This is dark. Okay. I'm just giving a dark example of just saying there's just decisions. And it's very rare that you know what the outcome of a decision is. And it's sometimes you may not even know, like, I mean, I'm going to give an example that's dark. So let's say, because you, it's hard to know what would have been the payoff had you made the different decision that you didn't make. Let's say you're running late to a flight and you miss your flight, and this inconveniences you, and you know, you're supposed to get to, I don't know, some sort of like conference, and then you miss the first day, and you have to pay for change fees, and you have to get on a flight, and you're like, oh God, I can't believe I left the house so late, and you're tired, and then you got to pay for, you know, a new flight, and then you miss the first day. But what if the flight you missed, that plane goes down? Ooh, interesting. As it turns out, it was a great decision for you to miss that flight, and you didn't even mean to do it. So it's difficult to, you know, look at any decision and say that, okay, well, if I make this one, things are going to go great. And if I make this other one, things are going to go poorly. Now, you can obviously, you exercise your best judgment. You want to get as much information as you can. But let's say you were between two different candidates, and both are great candidates, and both have gone through a great hiring process. And, you know, you would have set up both to succeed, and you hired one over the other. The one didn't work out. How do you know the other one would have? You really don't, because you can't go back in time. Okay. So sometimes, rather than trying to like avoid making the wrong decision, which is what creates a lot of indecisiveness, is just make decisions. And the faster you can make decisions, the faster you can get data back, and you can pivot and make new decisions, and the faster you can get to whatever your goal is. So that's what I would say in terms of overcoming, you know, analysis paralysis. There's shirts we used to hand out to some of our clients that said, indecisiveness is weakness. And it is, because we did this is one of our early AMMAs over a year ago, was just not making a decision is making a decision. When you put something off and say, I'm going to kind of wait and see, I'm going to kind of feel things out, I'm going to see what's going to happen, or I don't know, I'm going to wait for this trial to settle before I, you know, move forward on any new investments in the firm. Like, all that's happening there is you're just procrastinating, because as soon as that day comes, oh, it's like, okay, a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, you're in the same place or worse than you were before. And then when you're faced with the same decision, guess what happens typically? You tell yourself the same bullshit, saying, well, let me continue to wait and see. And it's, you know, and again, you could have made the prior decision and been wrong. And by the time that next milestone came, you could have made a different decision and been on the right track. So my whole point is that there's just decisions, and the speed and rate at which you can make them is extremely important. And if you operate through the framework of like, what is the cutoff of the amount of information that I need to make a decision? I mean, you're never going to have 100% of the information for anything that has any sort of, you know, potentially high upside or variable upside. I mean, again, if you know everything for sure, there's no decision. You know, it's just a task, right? Correct. The decision involves some degree of uncertainty. And if you can't navigate said uncertainty, then maybe you shouldn't run a business. Because if you're so worried about being wrong, and you're so worried about, you know, just failing to some degree, well, this is a part of the process. I mean, every successful entrepreneur has made bad decisions, and then they've also made good ones. And they only made good ones because they had the experience of making bad ones. So you live and learn.
All right, to round us out today, so when faced with a challenging project or obstacle, I often feel overwhelmed and tempted to abandon ship. How can I build resilience and stay committed to seeing things through, even when the going gets tough?
By not giving in to your temptations, okay? By being an adult and not a little baby, okay? So when things get tough, you're tempted to quit? Yes, that's the case for most of human beings. That's what tough does. you know, if you were quitting when it gets easy, that'd be odd. So how do you build up resilience? Well, you have to strengthen that resilience muscle. You know, it's not like somebody comes out of the womb and they're immediately resilient and they just can stick with hard things. It's that they develop that muscle over time by sticking with things that were difficult and challenging and not giving up when they got bored or when they got frustrated. You know, so it's being able to lead themselves in a way where they were able to develop a level of discipline to see things through to completion. And part of that is you're keeping promises to yourself. You set out to do something. Okay, you know, the climb, you know, had a bit of more adversity than we anticipated and we could give up. Let's say what happens, you know, when you set out to do something, you give up. When you give up and you made a decision you were going to do some sort of initiative, you lose confidence with yourself. Okay, so in the future, you make it okay to give up on things when things get difficult. Alternatively, if you stick with things when things get difficult, now you condition yourself to stick with things. Okay, so that's how you build up that resilience. It's not, you don't give in to your temptations. Okay, if you're trying to be a grown adult and you have to be able to separate your emotions from your decisions. It's like, yeah, of course. Like there's days where, I mean, for years, it's like, who likes coming in on Saturday and Sunday? Who likes staying late and, you know, at 8 and 9 p.m.? Like you leave for the office when it's dark out, you're coming home when it's dark out. Like, who enjoys that? I don't know many people who truly enjoy that, but they are disciplined. And sometimes you have to do what you have to do, even if you don't like it. Right? What's the Mike Tyson quote? It's like, discipline is doing what you hate to do, but doing it like you love it. And that's how you build up that resilience, by being committed to the plan that you set out. It doesn't mean like, okay, I'm only going to be committed so long as I enjoy it or it's fun. You're going to do it when it's fun and when it's not fun and when you enjoy it and when you don't enjoy it and when it's easy and when it's hard. You're just going to do it. You're going to fucking do it. Okay? And then when you get to the end, guess what? You built up a muscle and a skill to where you stick with things. And you do this enough times and this just becomes your normal. You know, now you build up some confidence because you honor your promises to yourself. Now you start to do even more challenging things. And that require even more resilience. You know, that continues to compound because now you have more courage and you have more confidence. So that's the only way to do it. You just have to, at some point, if you want to build some sort of skill or you want to build some sort of capability, you have to be able to experience situations that require you to build said capability. It's like, how do I become a more patient person? By being put in situations that test your patience. Okay, that's how you do it.
It's like the only way out is through.
That's true. That's it.
And that's all we got today.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
You've been listening to the Game Changing Attorney Podcast with Michael Mogul. If you found this episode valuable, here are three free ways that we can help you grow your law firm. Number one, download the first chapter of Michael's book absolutely free at gamechangingattorney.com. Number two, you can shoot Michael a text at 404-531-7691 and ask him any question you'd like. You might just hear the answer on the next episode. And finally, number three, if you can leave this podcast a 5-star review, it will help us gain access to more influential thought leaders and bring their lessons learned here to you. For more information on this episode, see the show notes in your podcast app or visit legalpodcast.com.